What's up, everybody? It's LG Doucette here. You're listening to The First Mint, a podcast where I talk about NFTs and the world of Web3. The podcast comes out every Monday morning and occasionally on Wednesdays. If you like this content and you want some more, feel free to visit our Twitter page at The First Mint. It was the afternoon of October 22nd. It was a Friday. And I was sitting there at my desk monitoring NBA Top Shot like a fiend, like I used to do. I don't anymore, but I used to have all these screens set to refresh on the blog and Top Shot Explorer and all that kind of stuff. I used to break the news. It was 3 days into the NBA season, and I saw the blog refresh, and I saw Series 3 Roadmap. I snapped, I wrote up the tweets as fast as I could, posted the thread about everything that was coming out, and then hopped onto Twitter Spaces with Phil D and other people to chat about what was coming up. As we were chatting on Twitter Spaces and I was reading through what was coming up, I had a thought. This is a lot of supply. It was going to be two new sets of moments per month. And what I want to talk about today is the card collecting dilemma of NFTs, and card collecting as in NFT projects that are based on sports card dynamics, and what's happening to a lot of them across the board right now as their market prices and community sentiment really struggled. The projects that rely on new supply and pack drops to come out regularly. We're going to go deep, folks. This is The First Mint. Before we get into it, I do want to put out a disclaimer out there, and you guys can search this, you probably know. But in terms of my portfolio holdings, and as well as the First Mint's relationships in this space, because again, the projects we're going to talk about today and the overall industry that they represent, some of them we're partnered with, okay? So this is a bit of a strange thing to be doing, but it needs, what I'm saying today, I really felt like needed to be said, and I really wanted to get it off my chest. So portfolio-wise, depending which day you look, I think my Top Shot portfolio is worth somewhere between $75,000 and $100,000, which is still kind of crazy to say out loud. Most of that based in like two or three legendary nice Series 1 moments that I got way before First Mint. The rest kind of just like collector score building and stuff that I've accumulated in just S2 and S3. My portfolios in other sports collecting projects, not nearly as glamorous. For NFL All Day, UFC Strike, Candy Digital, Major League Baseball, and NASCAR, as well as NFTU, my holdings range between $300 to $500 USD. I don't hold anything in FaZe, which is Dapper's cricket product, and there's maybe a few other sports products that I hold, but I think that kind of covers the ones that we're going to talk about today, or at least the ones that I'm referencing. In terms of relationships, obviously we've worked with Dapper in the past. They've sponsored two of our events, and we've collaborated voluntarily in terms of running a few events like Twitter Spaces and streams, but that a lot of that is in the past. And we're currently promoting Candy Digital and NFTU, obviously trying to help awareness and get the word out and get some of those data stats over to you guys. And in this past week, both of those two projects, NFTU and Candy, actually paused their release schedule, largely probably due to community sentiment and market prices. And Top Shot has had all sorts of issues lately in terms of their supply. So this is a perfect time, honestly, to be diving into this topic. And I want to say before we start is that, well, we've already started a couple minutes in. I love these projects. I love their promise, their teams. I've developed fantastic relationships with honestly really solid human beings on each of these teams. And I, like probably many others, I really want these projects to succeed. I want everyone to love them. I want them to do so well. And I want the entire NFT community to love them and for the community that they've built to continue to love them. The problem as of late is pretty obvious. New supply comes in. The price of the NFTs in market goes down. Sentiment goes down. Utility is expected. And the appetite for more supply dries up as a result. And we end up in this long-term kind of death spiral of expectation versus supply versus community, all vying for higher market prices. We're seeing this happen in Top Shot right now, and we've seen it happen for a while. Many of you listening are from the Top Shot community. That's where we started, and many of you by are new or returning or even just kind of passive to Top Shot and these other products. A year ago, after a major market boom, Top Shot began introducing more supply. The prices were high and new supply came in, and naturally it deflated. And the more supply was put into Top Shot, the lower the prices went. The lower the prices went, the fewer users participated. And as the profitability of making money on packs and moments started to evaporate and other NFTs came to life and started to capture people's imagination, things generally did not feel or go super well. However, since then, Top Shot has been hard at work investing in marketing, communications, and of course the product. And I will say that I think that the Top Shot marketplace is by far the most functional in NFTs. It's wonderful to use. But marketing and communications have struggled, and I don't mean the people there, and this isn't a show about the merit of those people or their performances at their jobs. But what I want to say here is that marketing communications have struggled because they are near futile in the face of twisted market dynamics. And with tons of new supply constantly coming, it is really hard for marketing and communications to do their job. Because at the end of the day, this is a financial market across all products. Top Shot, like all the others on the list, is a business. They need to make money, and they have. But they also need to keep collectors happy. And no amount of marketing, communications, or fulfillment is going to do that or outweigh the supply versus demand issue. People are not making big amounts of money in Top Shot and in these sports projects, and they are in other places of NFTs. So what I want to explore here are the two prongs of this problem and also this opportunity, the companies themselves and the users, and how each of them contribute in different ways to this current kind of challenging phenomenon. And as usual, I want to stay constructive, so I'll give suggestions at the end on how we can move past this initial phase and to a more positive and happy community of NFT people. And I also say that I don't know it all. This show is not the end-all be-all of these projects, nor is it the roadmap for what's to come, what they should do, anything. It's an observation in my personal thoughts, both as someone who works in NFTs and someone who collects NFTs. These are my thoughts on an industry that I don't want to see disappear before it even gets going. Prong number one, the companies. Each of these companies are VC-backed companies. Their objective is simple: make money. That's it. Attract users, make money. Make them pay. Most of these projects exist, honestly, because of NBA Top Shot. I'm sorry, some of them are very original, they're very, very wonderful, but they all exist because of Top Shot's success about a year ago. Top Shot exploded onto this scene, brought so many people into NFTs, and made revenue for a sports league in a way that had never been done before. Naturally, I'm sure about a year ago after the Top Shot boom, that every single one of these leagues was excited about finding themselves a partner who could help do for them what Dapper had done for Top Shot. The problem there is that Top Shot's early success was created in an unsustainable environment in terms of the long-term roadmap of the product. Top Shot struggled to get product out in January and February last year because there were too many users. And yet, it's that boom that attracted all these companies. So all these sports places, all these sports leagues have come in with those expectations where they might not actually be reality. Sports are an enormous business, and so are sports collectibles. They feed the inner nerd jock of every single one of us. We love to crunch stats, follow storylines. We like to love our teams, have parties with our friends, and of course, share in fandom. And in that early 2021 boom of NFTs, the most valid comparison of what these NFTs were was to sports cards. Heck, I even wrote an article that I released on October 1st, 2020, the first day of open beta for Top Shot, about how this was so much more of an evolved medium than sports cards, and this was going to usher thousands, millions of people into crypto. So it's no surprise that after Top Shot's early success, many entrepreneurs went gunning for those sports licenses with their tech startup. And on top of paying a fee for those licenses, they probably almost promised those leagues something very important, especially in the middle of a pandemic: revenue. Again, sports is a business, revenue is expected, and that's okay. We criticize a lot. We're like, oh, another pack drop. This is so greedy. But that's how it all works. For these big sports leagues and brands to come to the table, revenue is expected. The problem is that these tech startups are bending to the leagues a little too much and approaching this medium like it is a typical sports collectible medium, which it is not. Crypto is about community capital. It's about letting people participate in money, in capital, in community capital, and for that community capital to have an impact for thousands, millions of people. In the NFT world, we're just a bunch of normal people who aren't interested in finance. We didn't want DeFi. We wanted NFTs. We don't like finance. We like NFTs. We like this kind of market. The best NFT projects are the ones that have brought people together over something they all love and let them willingly increase its value, membership, and status. The best NFT projects have launched their supply and worked to maintain a fine balance of development of the utility of that supply with community sentiment, mystery, and the swings of the market. The best NFT projects don't just listen to the holders. They try to make them rich, I'm serious, through a concoction of what I just said. And it's okay to say that. That's the game we're playing. But it's the opposite game of what sports leagues do. For sports leagues, their mandate is to create an entertaining product and market it. And that way, all those fans will continue to watch and buy. They're bringing that approach and that mentality to NFTs, and it simply does not work. NFTs, as a whole, compete with other crypto investments. They are for people who are open and curious to crypto, and they fight to take those dollars away from Bitcoin and DeFi and other things you can do in crypto. But in general, they know that they must market within the realm of this new paradigm shift, of this new community capital. And hence, it makes the tactics used by NFT native projects so much scrappier and more innovative and calls generally for more risk-taking. But that's not what sports leagues do. They don't have that. Sports leagues are a 100-year-old business. Their product is known in every household. Kids play it from very early age, whether it's basketball or hockey or football or baseball or whatever, soccer. And everyone, or most of everyone, can name you a famous athlete of some kind. Even those people who are like, I don't like sports, they know like a Michael Jordan or a Wayne Gretzky. Come on. And hence, the people crafting these sports NFT projects are approaching it from a standpoint of, well, people know this IP, they love this league, they love this sport, and they'll want to buy it in its new format like they have always bought it in its new format, which is why people like Roham use statistics like, hey, there are 400 million global NBA fans that are going to love Top Shot. And the problem there, right now especially, is that normal people hate NFTs. They ridicule them, same as they did the internet early on. So marketing all of this to them in a very traditional way is not going to work, because these are crypto products in a crypto environment made for crypto people that they're trying to sell to non-crypto people. It doesn't work. Now, each of these companies in question, they have wonderful people working there, especially really wonderful crypto native people, many of whom have shaped the early goings of the NFT world. And they know what we need. They know what these products are going to go. They know that we want staking and burning, craft and tokenization, all that fun stuff. They know what it takes to innovate. But turning a sports league into a fluid financial market? Man, you're going up 100 years of red tape, bureaucracy, and money to try and make that happen. Heck, some states don't even have sports gambling yet. And it's taken 3 decades for fantasy sports to actually get where they are. This is an industry that has, forever, figured that the ceiling of perks for fans consists of signed jerseys, signed shoes, exclusive game tickets. I'm not picking on anybody here. I'm just saying that's been done for a long time, and it's what these sports leagues think and accept as fan rewards. They use these same incentives to grow their social media Web2 presences. And they're all about to realize that that's not enough or even the right thing in Web3. because the native crypto projects reward people with crypto exclusive rewards that grow their crypto portfolio. So it's going to take a long time. And it's unlikely that the fun crypto part is included in the fine print of these licenses. Licenses that were probably pretty hard to get in the first place or competitive. Prong number two. The people, the users, us people. Who are us people? Who are we that are into NFTs? We joke every day about being such degens and monitoring NFTs all the time, but inevitably, maybe we're just kind of a bunch of lonely people who found a place to make money and come together with others during the pandemic. From a social standpoint, the NFT doors are kind of closed right now until the next kind of big iteration. Like I said, people that aren't into NFTs hate NFTs right now. They think they're illegal and they rejoice anytime they see a big news story about a hack or some NFT scam. The same attitudes they had towards Napster early on, or even social media. I was early to Facebook, and people used to roll their eyes whenever I would bring it up, just like they roll their eyes at NFTs right now. But the curious ones are here. We are here. And at this point, there could be millions of us, honestly. It's hard to kind of define or find real numbers about the actual demographic of NFT collectors. So let's just say that we're youngish or young at heart, and that we're opportunists. What are our expectations, though? What do we expect from being in NFTs? This is the most important part, because this is where the community sentiment is so vital, because perhaps often our expectations are not being met. But what are those expectations? Like it or not, we have high expectations as NFT people, and they are financially based. This is a result of the market, the conditions, and honestly, it's kind of what makes NFTs so kind of incredible, but also really contentious. It's a financial market of culture, where the nuances between a winner and a loser are so incredibly finite, but finite to the point where being a winner, being on the winning side, is gratifying because it was based on your own cultural barometer, which is why people like Gary Vaynerchuk are so incredibly successful. That guy knows culture. In its current form, here's what currently makes up a positive NFT experience. A, the opportunity to invest in a project and also massively benefit from that project in an almost instant kind of way, at least in terms of the timelines of regular investing. That massive benefit can come from a surprise mint, you got one of the rarest one, or various lotteries along the way. Other mints that come along, derivatives, or even just the project mooning. Bored Apes is a great example. Of course, they gave everybody a dog and a mutant serum, and each of those were lotteries in themselves. Maybe you got a rare dog. Maybe you got an M3 serum worth 1,500 Ethereum. For the people who bought into those culturally relevant projects, they've done well, and they expect for a great project to reward them because they expect the culture of that project to be relevant. We also expect to be able to find community, and I know that that's an overused term, but that community is vital to help us evaluate our cultural decisions, to help us discover new opportunities, and to also collectively, all of us, regulate how this industry flows and reinforce those barriers that make or break projects. We collectively call the shots on what is done and what is not with our wallets. And see, above all else, we seek a level of consistency, which is a hilarious thing to say. It's a hilarious thing, even when I wrote it. But we want to be able to play this lottery and invest on a weekly basis, find our community on a daily basis, and we want the market moves to make some kind of sense within this bubble. We want the assets that are culturally strong in NFTs to hold their value. We want that to be consistent. If the price of Bored Apes changed by 50 ETH on a daily basis, that would be berserk. But right now it's been holding around 100, which is insane, for the better part of a couple months. For that consistency to work, we need clear rules of engagement from the project founders. Most NFTs have been able to do this in a very simple way. My biggest gripe with the sports projects, supply. They cap supply, 10,000 PFPs. It's capped, there's only 10,000. And even when they do release more supply, that new supply always comes with very clear rules. And that new supply comes so seldomly, like once or twice a year, maybe, and is designed to reward current holders, provide a new access point for new people, and add more dimensions to that market that people can obsess over. And they do that while the teams in the background are building the brand and new products around the brand and work towards creating the standards of the NFT future. Flashback to the sports mentality for a second. This does not align. Sports are established, well-known brands. They don't take the profit they make to further build the brand. They take the profit as profit. They're franchise-based. It's profitable, or it should be, to own a sports franchise, and that's fine. That's sports. But that ain't no startup mentality. So naturally, it's challenging for them to align with their startup NFT licensed partners to bring these projects to life in a way that they both agree on. The core of the sports brand business does not align with the current core of the Web3 brand business. And this is not just for the sports brands and the dappers and all of them to understand. This is for us to understand as well. We have to temper our expectations. These are not the same products. If we want these big brands here, we got to be patient with them. It's going to take them a while. We have to accept this and stop fucking whining about it. Now, in conclusion, and I'm going to get to the recommendations, the constructive feedback in a minute. It's coming. Don't worry. Conclusion here is that these collecting products, at the end of the day, they're wonderful. It's fun. It's amazing to be able to do all this. They're tied into long-term deals, and they have incentive to get it right and to stay relevant. They're learning every day. As we've seen from the changes made recently, they are learning and they're finding solutions. They're going to get it right. Or rather, some of them are going to get it right or find a version of what right is. Crypto is a market of innovation. And again, no offense, but a lot of these projects kind of mimicked what Topshot did early on because Topshot set the stage. And they've replicated a similar platform just with different IP. But it's adversity that drives innovation, not just opportunity. And there's so much more money to be made in standing out than just fitting in. Maybe these projects are totally going to separate from each other and build completely different platforms and experiences. Or perhaps one's going to create an entirely new medium, take the next step, and all the others will follow. The potential here outweighs the daily bad vibes of low marketplace numbers and too much supply. And that's probably why we're still sticking around. That's probably why we're still talking about them. We know that the space will innovate. And we love these sports and collecting them very much. I'm down to wait. We are down to wait. Even if it gets a little toxic sometimes. Now, in terms of recommendations, what can be done? There's two ways to look at this. There's the short term in the next 6 months, 0 to 6 months. And there's the long term, 6 months to 36 months. I recently did a podcast about the 36 months from now in NFTs. So thinking kind of with that hat on. Basically, the difference between the short term and the long term is the short term is what can be done with the features available right now in each project. And the long term is stuff that requires a bit of a different build that will require the developers to build something different or new or alter what they have. And before I continue, let's assume two facts. One, that platforms must continue to add users, both NFT people and normies, and that platforms must continue to bring in revenue with new supply. Because that mental shift, honestly, for the leagues, the one I'm saying that they're going to need to do with their brand, that's more than 3 years away. I'm sorry, but it's going to take them a really long time to figure that part out. And what I'm trying to do here is give suggestions that are very Web3, things that these sports brands haven't really had to do in too many formats prior to this. Short-term recommendations. Number one, form community councils. This is simple. We've started to see it, but I'm talking super collectors, new fans, people that are running analytics platforms. Have these community councils of community members hold meetings in the open, like on spaces or stages, and make public recommendations to the platform. Make these open source recommendations that are agreed upon by some of the people that are most passionate and the builders of your community. Short-term recommendation number two, host IRL events, of course, has been done a bunch of times, but that incentivize holders and normal people. And I don't mean like two or three events a year. I mean dozens of events, hundreds. Get a way, find a way to put those NFTs into people's hands. Get people that are your holders to bring some of their friends and incentivize that. And don't just set up booths where people can sign up. Bring in people who can tell stories about the product, that can set up a trading booth, anything like that. In NFTs, we're kind of a weird, refined crowd, right? We're all degenerates, but we feel like we're special and that we're really smart. So make these events kind of feel that way. Short-term idea number three, community grants. This was such a vital key early on in the Bored Ape success. It was really simple. They gave out like $1,000 or $2,000 grants. They gave Josh Ong $1,000 to host two different meetups, one in New York, one in LA. And they gave Jenkins the Valet a bit of money to develop his brand, and look what's happened now. That's one of the best NFT projects that you can invest in. Who knows what would happen with community grants on some of these projects? Short-term idea number four, create deflationary metrics. I know burning is maybe a feature to build in, but man, this is so obvious. We've been talking about this for so long. And listen, if your project is going to have millions of tokens, which is what these are, all these NFTs are tokens, there needs to be a way for them to be destroyed aggressively and regularly. Even think back, the Wax project, Tops, like last fall, which is gone now. They had crafting like once a week. What happened to this? Why can't we do that? The deflation of the tokens must outweigh the new supply. We must burn at a faster rate than we mint, which will make people go totally berserk with game theory, which is what is going to generate a lot of the fun. Short-term idea number five, further create distance between the best and the worst cards. Be public about that. I want to know things like this legendary set or these legendary cards are going to be access to all this stuff, not the other legendary ones, only these. And I also want to hear, hey, these cards, they're never going to fucking matter. They're just there. That's fine. It's okay to say that. Not every NFT has to be special. We want to know which assets matter and which don't. And it's fine to say certain collections or assets are past their prime and that they're done, so long as it's clear. Short-term idea number six, make the new supply a massive event. And man, please, guys, Discord pings and blogs, like we need to move past this. Yes, those are important, but those are the same way we deliver things like platform updates or, hey, it's time to mint or you're on whitelist or whatever. We need a fucking show. We need teases and hints of things to come. Send me on an Easter egg hunt to find out who's next coming on the platform, which athlete is next. Make a deal with friggin' ESPN or some action network to broadcast that kind of stuff. Please. That's how we want to see new supply. And the last short-term recommendation, and this is something, again, we're just kind of, this is not innovating, but we're taking from what other projects are doing. Give us some kind of whitelist for projects. I'm serious, like an allow list or something like that. We don't see any of these projects do this. Yes, we get a whitelist for their own drops. Sure, you get a collector score, or you hold this and you get early access or whatever. But whitelists are literally the hottest thing that there is right now. There'd be an enormous lineup of projects that would want to give these projects whitelists. So let's do it. Now for the long-term ideas. And these are recommendations. Again, this is just stuff maybe they could build. Some of it is to kind of fit into the current NFT system a little bit better. Some of the stuff is, I don't know, just stuff that you'd kind of expect. Or maybe just some original ideas. Long-term idea number one, make profile photos. I'm serious. I know it sounds funny, but I can't help but laugh when I say it. But make some PFPs that don't infringe on the IP. And this is, again, kind of based on the last short-term point. This is kind of going with the flow. What's hot right now? Give people PFPs so they can flex these great sports projects on social and in Discord. Of course, you want to innovate, but man, people would love this, so it's okay to go with the flow just a little bit. Get some sick artists and go make some cool PFPs for your holders. Long-term idea number two, create a leveling system. Top Shot Collector Score, that's a good start, but it doesn't reward longevity. One of the best parts of loyalty programs, which we know, you know, in regular life, is that the more you keep using it, the more often you use it, and the longer you're there, the more likely you are to eventually get good stuff. It's what drives the use of that product over the ones that are comparable. So give us levels for total drops that we've bought, total spend on the marketplace, total challenges completed, total cards burned, cards held for a certain amount of lengths, and total cards held overall. When's the last time one of these projects rewarded people or even acknowledged people that had over 500 cards or 1,000 or 2,000 in some kind of substantial way? That's what we want. Long-term idea number three, partner with these massive platforms that you use already and push them to the next level. Get them to build something unique for your project. I'm talking Twitter and Discord. And to a different level, OpenSea and Coinbase. Everybody wants to have their own marketplace, but like, come on, guys. Like, everybody's chasing that 5%, but let's get in it with the game. Go where the collectors are. You're likely one of the, these projects are likely the only brands to actually have the clout to do this, to push innovation on those platforms. So why not? The best I've seen is a Twitter hashtag, a unique one. Come on. These are massive established platforms. You can definitely collaborate with them to do more. And long-term idea number four, the final one, is perhaps rework the license. Well, I guess not rework the license, but just ask the league partners, the IPs, to show their faces. The best NFT projects are doxed teams. They want to be transparent. We believe in the teams. That matters so much in NFTs, who the team is, who's making decisions. And yet we don't get anything from these IP partnered sport leagues. We just get athletes that are paid to promote the drops. Not hearing from the sports leagues directly, from the people that are in charge of Web3 over there, it's demeaning. It's almost delegitimizing to the project. And I don't necessarily mean the commissioners of the leagues or anything like that, but who are the people who signed the deal? Who is running NFTs and Web3 at the league office? I want to know that they're invested. All the blue chips and NFTs, they have this. They have the leaders top down from the organization, public facing. Now, it's not very traditional to do this in the regular sports collecting world, but to survive in Web3, it is absolutely vital. Now, that's the end of the list. And that's honestly the end of the podcast. And I don't know what to expect from here. I hope people are listening to this show and I hope we expect this, but not too much. You know, relax, take our time. And I hope maybe the people at these leagues will listen or at least take this into account. It's been on my mind for a really long time, and it's honestly based on what I'm seeing out there on the streets and trying to find some solutions, trying to be constructive. And I'll reemphasize the absolute most important part is that we want these projects to succeed, and we want to celebrate them, and we all want to win together as one big community. Going to do it for us today, folks. Thank you so much for listening. It's my first original pod that I've recorded in quite some time, and it's been very nice to do this. We're back on track now. You're going to be hearing more of this stuff, and also just maybe, the return of the live show sometime very soon. So we'll see you next time on the first one.